Well, it's time to start, and today we'll plan to finish up the book of Ruth. What we covered last week from the chapter 4 to this point was Boaz knows that there's a closer relative than him, than himself, to perform this levirate marriage with Ruth. So he has to go confront in a formal court setting to see if he's willing to perform the levirate marriage, which if he's not willing to do it, he's already told Ruth that Boaz will marry her himself. So she's going to get a levirate marriage and a child one way or another out of one of these two men. But anyway, they have to go through this formal setting. So Naomi tells Ruth that Boaz will not rest until this matter is settled. And so the first thing in the morning, I'm sure it was at dawn, he was standing at the gate where obviously where they would hold court. And here comes this closer relative who remains unnamed. And then he stops 10 elders. So these are the witnesses to this court proceeding. And he asks him if he is willing to purchase the land through a somewhat levirate marriage of some sort with Naomi. Now, of course, Naomi is elderly, so she's not going to have any children. Which basically it is, are you willing to pay the small price of rent and then you will own the land forever and you can give to your descendants? And so the man said, well, of course, yes, I'm a... That's an economic windfall opportunity of a lifetime for him and his descendants. Just getting all this land that Elimelech and Naomi had. And so he just could not believe this good amount of wealth that has come his way for a very small price. And so then, after he accepts that, then Boaz lays on him the rest of the story, which was, now you also have to perform the levirate marriage with Ruth. Well, that changed everything up, and he said that he could not afford that because that would take too much away from his family, because what that meant was he would now have to support two families, Ruth and then his own family, and support this child with Ruth, and whatever then he paid for this land until the Jubilee, until the 50th year was up, he would be completely out, because then it would go to this child, the land that Elimelech and Naomi had. So he wasn't going to get any benefit. He only wanted to do this if there was a benefit. So he said that he was not able to do this. So he, as the custom was, he took his shoe off and he handed it to Boaz, meaning that he was transferring his right of this levirate marriage and his obligation onto Boaz, which Boaz readily accepted. So, that is where we are, and starting with Ruth chapter 4, verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. So this is the wedding ceremony here. And when he went in to her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. And of course, his name is going to be Obed, which is about to be named here in the next few verses. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel." Now, when we first read this, this sounds like that these women are talking about Boaz, but it's not. It's talking about Obed, which that comes apparent in the last phrase of verse 15. Boaz has accepted to perform the levirate marriage with Ruth and to raise up a child, which will actually be extending the lineage of Elimelech and Naomi. And since Elimelech died, and then both of Naomi and Elimelech's two sons have died and without heirs, so now this what's known as a levirate marriage between Ruth and Boaz will be the lineage that extends their generations, and ultimately is going to be, in just a few generations, King David. And then after that, of course, King Solomon. And then 1,000 years or so into the future will be the Messiah, Jesus. All through this lineage. So that's how important this book is. And this tells the history of this lineage of David and Jesus in the future. So, but with Ruth 4, verse 14, it sounds like that this is talking about Boaz, that I'll reread verse 14. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel." So this is talking about, instead of Boaz, it's talking about Obed, the child. It'll be Naomi's grandchild. And verse 15, "And may he be to you a restorer of life." So this child, these women are saying to Naomi, "May he be a restorer to you of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has borne him." So, may this child be a restorer of life. And he definitely is going to be, because now it's going to extend their generation that otherwise was going to be cut off right here. And a nourisher of your old age. Her elder years are much better than her younger years, because her younger years, losing her husband and her two sons during this famine, they were very tough. It was like depression era times. And so her later years were much better than her early years. So verse 16. "Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her bosom and became a nurse to him." So we would call Naomi being like the nanny. So she was the caretaker for the child, and which she loved taking care of her grandchild. And but we would call her a nanny today. Verse 17. "Also the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, 'There is a son born to Naomi,' and they called his name Obed." This is the child's name. "He is the father of Jesse and the father of David." So we have Obed, Jesse, and David being the youngest son of Jesse. And verse 18. "Now this is the genealogy of Perez. Perez begot Hezron." And now Perez was the child of Tamar and Judah. And that was also by a levirate marriage. And it was also came by that Judah's second and third child refused to perform the levirate marriage, since God had killed the eldest son. And the second two refused to perform the levirate marriage with Tamar. And so Judah ultimately did. And so this also came through a refusal of others to perform the levirate marriage. So it wasn't the first one in line just as this was in case, as this was the case here, that Boaz, there was a closer relative to Naomi than Boaz, and he refused to perform the levirate marriage, and so Boaz did. And but that's Perez. He is the child of Judah and Tamar. Back before they were taken in captivity of Egypt, so that was 500 or so years before this time, or maybe 400, whatever the time frame is. I think probably about 500. So Perez begot Hezron. Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Amminadab. Amminadab begot Nahshon. And Nahshon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz. And Boaz begot Obed. Obed begot Jesse. And Jesse begot David. So, this is the lineage. And then 1,000 years into the future from King David's day is when Jesus the Messiah was born in this same lineage. This is the lineage that both Joseph and Mary are out of. And so this is the historical background of Jesus's lineage even. Any questions or comments on anything?
Seems kind of strange to me that we don't have a recording of Ruth involved in this.
Well,
I don't think so.
That was taken care of by whoever was the closest relative. And so this other man that wasn't Boaz, there was one that was a closer relative, and Boaz let Ruth know that. And he said, I've got to ask him first, and but if he is unwilling to perform the levirate marriage duty, he said, then I will. And that's how that went down. It was about who was closer relative. It was like, let's say Boaz was a second cousin, but this other relative was a first cousin. So that's what determined that. They were just going by closest relative. And then Boaz was the next in line whenever this other man refused. Yes.
So, was it the relative that gave permission for her to marry somebody else, or did she marry the first cousin or whatever?
What it was, she wanted to marry Boaz. She was following Naomi, the mother-in-law's direction. Now, Ruth was a Gentile, so she didn't know the ins and outs of the Mosaic law and the Hebrew traditions and customs. But Naomi knew it all. So Naomi told Ruth to go to Boaz. Possibly she was still in her mourning clothes, maybe in a like black dresses, because she was still mourning the loss of her husband. So Naomi told her to go get in her best clothes, so get out of these older clothes, and then that was showing Boaz that she was ready for marriage. That's right. It was like a garment marriage type of symbolism and custom. So at that point, he knew that she was asking for this levirate marriage. And of course, Boaz knew all the ins and outs of all these customs. And he said, he told her, there's a closer relative than I am. And he said, but I'm going to have to, it had to be a court proceeding. And going to have to determine now if he's willing to perform the levirate marriage, which is going to be also a financial obligation that came along with that, which ultimately it was this financial obligation and going to lose all that he had spent on purchasing this land from Naomi that ultimately was the reason why he declined. So when this closer relative who remains unnamed declined, then Boaz did exactly what he had told Ruth already. Then I will perform the levirate marriage. And their custom was at that time was when anything was transferred, the one transferring would take his shoe off and hand it to the one that was the receiver now. And so the closer relative took his shoe off, handed it to Boaz. So Boaz now was taking on the obligation for the levirate marriage. And then Boaz was a rich man. He owned several or many plots of land that we know that Ruth was harvesting grain in all of his different fields following his other women servants. And so ultimately then, all of Boaz's land plus Elimelech and Naomi's land all got put with this child of Obed that is born of Boaz and Ruth. And then ultimately, Jesse, with all of his 12 sons, did he had 12 or 10, eight sons. And so all of his sons, they had quite a bit of wealth. Now, with Boaz, all of his land added in. So, but that this levirate marriage is something very strange. It's only mentioned these two times, Genesis 38 and here in Ruth, that I can think of. I don't think it's mentioned any other time. And so, except in Leviticus, which we read a week or two ago, that was the law that God gave Moses. But it preceded the law of Moses. It was even in with the patriarchal age, which preceded the law of Moses, but God brought that in even to the law of Moses. So they continued this. So, it is strange, but ultimately what the levirate marriage is, when a man died childless, then his brother was obligated then to raise up an heir for his brother, but this child would be the heir just like his brother would never died, and he would get what his dead dad would have received. And then, of course, if the brother refused or wasn't able, as in this case, both brothers died, and so there was no brother left. Their lineage was completely cut off. So ultimately then, it was it just goes to the next in line. And so that this levirate marriage is a strange ordeal, but it's strange to us. But any other questions or comments?